2025 has reached its final day. In a little while, this year will be over. It's a tradition for this channel to do a brief annual review at this time of year, and I don't intend to make an exception for 2025. I'm sure you've all noticed the title of this episode. The key word is absurdity. This is the word I've chosen to represent 2025. Throughout this year, everything has deviated significantly from its intended course, and this absurd world has taken a step towards a completely uncontrollable future. This uncontrollability leaves a final element of suspense for the upcoming year of 2026. The biggest keyword for China in 2025 is tax increases. From the beginning of the year to the end, a new set of tax increase measures was imposed on the people every month. Let me summarize the tax increases this year. First, at the beginning of the year, there was a reform of the consumption tax collection system, shifting the consumption tax from the national tax system to the local tax system, and transferring the collection point from production to retail. From then on, China entered a system where every purchase is subject to tax. No one can escape it. Second, the e-commerce tax. At the beginning of the year, the focus was on cracking down on online influencers and their sales activities. By the third quarter, this crackdown had expanded to all e-commerce businesses, including cross-border e-commerce. Even if your total online sales revenue is only 10,000 yuan and you've already lost all your money, you will also have to pay taxes. The third step is to levy personal income tax on residents' overseas income, such as taxing all overseas stock income. The fourth step is to strengthen the collection of rent from the third quarter onwards. The fifth step is to strengthen the collection of the notorious social security tax from the fourth quarter onwards. Originally, temporary workers in the catering and retail industries, and daily wage workers in small and micro manufacturing industries, were not enthusiastic about participating in urban social security. These migrant workers have unstable jobs, moving back and forth between cities and their hometowns, and will definitely return to the countryside when they get older. Of course, they don't care about the so-called urban social security. However, the deficit in social security funds is getting bigger and bigger, and the government must force these millions of poor migrant workers and their employers to pay social security fees. Of course, these back payments will all be collected and used to increase benefits for retired civil servants. All these tax increases together constitute China's sovereign debt doomsday tax increase in 2025. This is truly an absurd and unbelievable situation. And if you dare to screenshot this page and post it on your WeChat Moments, you will be lightly punished or severely punished. Note that I'm not kidding. Everyone, I hope you will stop asking this stupid question. When will China's economic crisis come? Everyone, the economic crisis has already arrived. You are now under the actual impact of the economic crisis. The debt storm, unemployment wave, and plummeting housing prices surrounding you now. Marriage crises, consumer spending on basic necessities, and other issues are all concrete manifestations of the economic crisis. This channel has been continuously following up on all these problems and has already provided detailed analyses. According to the results of a large-scale survey recently conducted by this channel, more than 80% of you have actually experienced the extreme pain brought about by the economic downturn, and the national unemployment rate has exceeded 50%. The most ridiculous thing is that since the beginning of this year, China's small and medium-sized banks have experienced a wave of bankruptcies. As of the end of November, 231 rural banks and 81 rural commercial banks had gone bankrupt, totaling an astonishing 394. Since December, the wave of bankruptcies among small and medium-sized banks has not stopped, but has intensified. I believe the data for the whole year will definitely exceed 450. You don't need to doubt that all these bankrupt banks died because of the economic crisis, because of cash flow disruptions. The money lent out encountered defaults, and the funds could not be recovered, causing a sudden break in cash flow, leading to bankruptcy. Here, I will also provide the data for the previous 3 years. In 2022, 31 small and medium-sized banks went bankrupt nationwide. In 2023, the number increased to 64. And in 2024, it further increased to 199. In 2025, the number is already expected to exceed 450. If such terrifying data were to occur in the free economies of Europe and the United States, it would already be a major financial crisis, even comparable to the Great Depression of the 1930s. Nor did the widespread wave of bankruptcies currently seen in China's financial sector occur back then. However, Red China has its own secretive way of dealing with these bankruptcies. Most of these bankrupt small and medium-sized banks are directly merged by large state-owned banks, completely eliminating the need to repay depositors. Only when depositors go to the bank to conduct business will they be surprised to find that the original bank has changed its sign and been replaced with the name of a large state-owned bank. The situation of some small and medium-sized banks is so dire that even large state-owned banks can't absorb them. Therefore, they simply ignore the problem and use coercive methods to prohibit any form of self-help or petitioning activities. This situation is common in Northeast China and Henan. However, even the method of large state-owned banks merging these bankrupt small and medium-sized banks doesn't truly solve the problem. The broken cash flow cannot be restored. The method of large banks merging small banks only uses the relatively abundant cash flow of large banks to barely cover up the cash flow disruption of small banks. These problems continue to fester and expand beneath the surface, and will eventually burst to the surface, exploding into a mushroom cloud that spreads across the sky. In other words, Red China's method of secretly covering up the already occurring financial crisis won't last long. With the deepening economic deterioration, a nuclear-level financial crisis will inevitably erupt in 2026, blowing everyone to smithereens. Therefore, the only question in 2026 is whether the Red regime can respond in time. A systematic social Darwinism model is being fully implemented. If the actions of the Red regime are too slow and ineffective, then the land of China will only descend into the most primitive jungle mode. Everyone will live by the law of the jungle. Your 100 plus pounds of flesh, in the eyes of your neighbor, is just enough food to keep his family alive for another week. This is merely the absurd beginning. What follows will be even more absurd. Precisely in this extremely harsh economic environment, Red China is also engaging in round after round of trade wars with the United States. In January, immediately after Trump was sworn into office, he imposed a 10% tariff on China twice in a row, totaling 20%. However, the fentanyl issue itself is very strange. Its smuggling chain is very clear. Precursor materials for fentanyl are exported from the Fujian region of China to countries like Mexico. The finished fentanyl product is synthesized in chemical plants in places like Mexico, and then smuggled into the United States, bringing extremely serious social disaster to the U.S. Currently, the most popular drug trade in the U.S. is fentanyl. Traditional heroin has almost disappeared. In 2024, the number of drug addicts in the U.S. exceeded 35 million, with 110,000 deaths due to fentanyl overdose. You must know that, in fact, China doesn't make much money from the smuggling of fentanyl precursors. Regardless of the calculation method, the maximum is only between $2 and $3 billion. Compared to the over $500 billion in trade between China and the United States, this amount is almost negligible. Furthermore, with the Chinese government's strong internal control capabilities, completely eradicating fentanyl smuggling from the Fujian region could be accomplished overnight. Starting in 2015, the U.S. Department of Justice requested China's cooperation in investigating fentanyl smuggling. In 2018, during the G20 summit in Argentina, President Trump himself raised the issue of investigating fentanyl smuggling with the Chinese side. However, the strange thing is that the Chinese government consistently refused to cooperate. It seemed that using fentanyl to harm the United States was a deliberate national policy of China, a bargaining chip that could not be easily abandoned. Therefore, since the beginning of this year, Trump, upon reassuming office, immediately identified China as the culprit for harming the United States with fentanyl and launched the fiercest tariff war against China. The Chinese government refused to budge, resisting the U.S. every step of the way, and the countermeasures from both sides escalated continuously. This tariff war lasted from the beginning of the year until the end of October, when China and the U.S. finally reached a consensus in Malaysia. The Chinese side finally agreed to fully cooperate with the U.S. in investigating fentanyl smuggling and handed over a key figure, a Chinese-Mexican drug trafficker named Zhang Zedong, to the U.S. as a gesture of cooperation. In return, the U.S. reduced the 20% tariff on fentanyl imports from China to 10%. The overall tariff level on Chinese exports to the U.S. also decreased from 5% to 4.5%. Looking back now, if this issue of allocation hadn't arisen, at least in terms of trade, Trump wouldn't have specifically targeted China. The massive trade deficit between the U.S. and China has exceeded the U.S. federal government's tolerance, and Trump undoubtedly had to rebuild the rules of engagement for the U.S. It's not just China, Europe, Japan, South Korea, India, Southeast Asian countries, and Latin American countries all face the problem of the U.S. establishing new trade rules. Ultimately, they were all subjected to tariffs of 10 to 20%. However, only China and the U.S. have had irreconcilable conflicts, with tariffs eventually reaching 45%. The crux of this conflict lies precisely in the bizarre and manipulative issue of allocation. By now, Everyone understands that the U.S.-China relationship has effectively broken down. The results of the U.S.-China negotiations in Malaysia merely provided a window of opportunity, albeit a very short one, during which everyone must quickly withdraw from China. Consequently, since the fourth quarter, the Chinese economy has plummeted, with all economic indicators showing a sharp decline. This channel has also provided a detailed analysis of this, and I won't list the data again here. However, what's even more absurd is that amidst this extremely bleak economic situation, with a fierce financial crisis and soaring unemployment, Red China actually publicly flaunted its power with the September 3rd military exercises. Red China, in conjunction with Russia and North Korea, formed a new Axis alliance, achieving unlimited cooperation. The United States' response to this was very direct. On December 4th, the U.S. released a new version of its national security strategy. The strategy targeting China was identified as the primary threat, aiming to maintain military deterrence against China and ensure long-term stability in the Taiwan Strait region, denying any attempt to seize Taiwan. This strategic declaration was quickly followed by action. On December 17, the U.S. government announced its latest arms sales plan, totaling $11 billion, primarily consisting of Patriot missile systems and self-propelled howitzers. Following the release of this arms sales plan, the deterioration of Sino-U.S. relations deepened immediately. Foreign companies that were previously hesitant were now forced to flee, prioritizing escaping China before anything else, as staying any longer would likely lead to their destruction. Frankly, looking at all these bizarre and absurd events together, the situation is incomprehensible in its absurdity. Imposing taxes during a time of impending doom, widespread mourning, condoning drug trafficking, and striving for hegemony, each of these elements, taken individually, has an extremely absurd, postmodernist flavor. All the details are fragmented and illogical. All actions lack logic, and all motivations are utterly absurd. It seems as if there are no longer any people capable of rational thought among China's 1.4 billion people. Everyone is performing their own bizarre display of mental illness, resulting in a chaotic spectacle followed by a deathly silence. Given the current level of absurdity, I can only say that whatever happens next,